Hello, everybody. This is Eva Herr, and welcome to the Healing of Agape this week. This week, I have a very special guest, Dr. Dan Benor, who's going to talk to us about holistic healing. How are you, Dr. Benor?
Fine, Eva. Thank you. How are you doing?
So, you have been practicing holistic medicine, and I noticed that you write it with a W instead of an H. Why is that?
I believe that in helping people, we need to address every aspect of their being, starting with spirit and including their relationships with each other and with the earth and the environment, going on to mind and emotions and body. Many people go the other way, but I believe that spirit comes first. So the W indicates I'm working on all of those levels.
I see. Now, you're a psychiatrist, right?
Well, I admit that amongst friends, because I trained in psychiatry when that was mostly psychotherapy. These days, people hear psychiatry and they think of medication.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm about.
That's exactly what I think of when I hear that word.
That's
pharmaceutical medication. So I'm so happy to find someone like you.
And that's why if I say I'm a psychiatrist, I always put holistic in front of that.
So tell me how to determine what treatments are right, whether it's, I mean, do you use conventional medicine with holistic healing? What do you do?
You're asking an excellent question, Eva. And that's the art of healing. It's different with each individual therapist, even though the training might be the same, even though the background and the knowledge might be similar, because we each resonate with the person who comes to us for healing in different ways. So from my experience of training in medicine, in psychology, in various forms of self-healing approaches, I reach into my, so to speak, holistic doctor's bag, and I pull out different approaches that I ask them to try on. Most of what I do is in the spectrum of self-healing. So, for instance, I have a technique called WHEE, W-H-E-E. That's what I put together as a holistic hybrid of EMDR and emotional freedom technique.
What was that first word you said? EMDR?
EMDR, eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing.
Oh, okay.
And that's a stimulation of the right and the left side of the brain by doing something on the body. So you might move your eyes right and left, or you might touch a different part of your body on the right and then on the left, alternating back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you stimulate the right and the left side of the brain.
And how would you do that?
Well,
if you had a patient sit in front of you, what would you tell them to do?
Well, would you like to just do it experientially?
Yeah, that would be great.
Do you have anything that makes you uncomfortable when you think about it? And it could be something simple like...
Yes, I do.
Okay. And if you want to share it, that's fine. And if you don't want to share it, that's okay also. But I'd ask you to say, if 10 is the worst you could feel right now when you think about it, and 0, it doesn't bother you at all, what number is it right now?
I can make it be a 10.
Okay, just think of, you know, whatever it is that makes it a 10.
Okay.
And then, can you give it a name? What is the feeling of it?
Yeah, I can give it a name.
Is it anxiety or fear or...
It's anger.
Anger. Okay, that's a goofy one.
Yes.
So, you would say this affirmation while you're touching the right and the left side of your body. And a nice way to do this is by holding your arm and patting each arm with your hand.
Uh-huh.
So you pat the right and the left and the right and the left. And as you're doing that, you say this affirmation. It goes like this. Even though I feel this anger, you might just say it out loud.
Okay, even though I feel this anger. And I should have my... I've got to hold the phone so I can do it with one hand, right? At the moment.
To do it with one hand would be better to just take two fingers and alternate touching the eyebrows.
Okay.
Across the bridge of your nose. So you touch the left eyebrow, then the right eyebrow, and the left, and the back and forth.
Okay, do I do it a certain number of times?
You keep on doing it in whatever rhythm feels good to you.
Okay.
And while you're doing that, I'll say the affirmation and you can repeat it after me.
Okay.
So it goes, even though I feel this anger.
Even though I feel this anger.
When I remember this.
When I remember this.
And when I focus on this.
When I focus on this.
I still love and accept myself.
I still love and accept myself.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And you feel comfortable saying, and God loves and accepts me?
Of course, and God loves and accepts me.
Wholly and completely.
Wholly and completely.
And unconditionally.
And unconditionally.
And keep on touching those two eyebrows and just take a nice, deep, deep breath. Just release whatever you can at the end of this round. And then just pause and ask yourself, okay, what's my number now?
You know what? That really did make a difference.
What number would you say it is?
3.
Excellent.
That was the number that it popped into my head like that right when you did that. I felt this sensation around my feet that went up to about the calves of my legs. That felt kind of like floaty feeling, if that makes any sense.
That's really lovely. It's a sense of releasing that people generally experience. And you can have any sort of sensation that goes along with that. Now, what we're talking about here is not about forgetting whatever it is, but about letting go of the feelings that we've stuck in our bucket, that we, you know, just carry around with us.
Mm-hmm.
Because many times when we're having bad feelings, there's not much we can do. So rather than suffer, we stuff it so that we're not aware of it. But then it ends up in that bucket inside that we carry around for a long time. So this is a way to empty the bucket. Now that's one of the most potent techniques I know, but I know dozens of others. And in fact, in my new book, How Can I Heal What Hurts, I have 100 pages discussing some of these different approaches that I keep in my holistic doctor's bag.
Could you give us some of those? Because I've had some radio interviews with some MDs who talk about, you know, physical problems such as backaches or cancers or heart disease, but I've had no one to help people learn how to deal with, say, depression issues and anger such as you're talking about. If you could share some of those, that would be fabulous.
Certainly, Eva. I welcome that invitation. Because I just love to share this. I do a lot of lectures and workshops where I teach this experientially, along with explaining it. So I would, first of all, if a person came to me with pain, ask whether the pain has anything that it wants to tell them. People are often startled because they may have had pain for years, and they never had anyone ask them what their body might be saying through this pain.
Can you give us an example? Because I'm thinking about a particular person that I know of that's going through some pain right now, and they kind of live, if you're familiar with David Hawkins, have you read that book, Hawkins' book, Power versus Force?
I've heard of it, I haven't read it. Read it.
They live in what Hawkins calls under 200, which is in live in the state of fear, you know, fear to change this or fear to change that, fear to acknowledge things. How would somebody like that?
Well, the first thing is that they're talking about pain, physical pain.
No, mental pain.
Okay. Mental pain, I would ask them, can they remember the very first time they felt it? And oftentimes, they'll come up with an experience that started it all. So they partly stuffed the feeling in their bucket, but partly it stayed around as a fear, a general fear. So the best way to get rid of it is to go to the bucket and find what was the original cause. If that can be addressed through we or some of the other techniques, then it really will clear things up more quickly. If they don't remember anything like that, then we just work on the feeling itself. The nice thing about this is that people can go home with we or some of the other techniques and use them themselves whenever they need to or want to. It's best, of course, if you can just take like a pill several times a day, releasing a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like putting a hole in the bucket so it starts dripping out, you know, releasing some of the junk that you've stuck there, and you just turn the spigot anytime you're ready to let some more out, and pretty soon you're not carrying near as much and you're feeling better. Some of the other techniques might be relaxation or meditation or imagery. On my website,
what is your website, by the way?
The International Journal of Healing and Caring online is ijhc.org. There's an article in the free issue of the journal discussing how to heal through love. So using imagery that involves love and healing and acceptance and forgiveness, a person can very potently release something that they've been carrying for years. So it's just another variation on the theme of letting go, along with weed.
What would some other of your techniques be, and how would a person do that?
Well,
because if you say imagery, some people may not know what you mean by that.
Supposing you had a bad experience that left you with a fear, and that fear sort of haunts you, I might suggest to a person, can you imagine to yourself, I don't recommend doing this on your own. We, you can do on your own, but this technique is better done with a counselor because it's so very potent and it's a bit complicated. But you might make an image of that fear. It might be a monster, it might be just a negative color, and then you invite that fear to come into a place where you treat it with love and healing and acceptance and forgiveness.
And how would you facilitate that? Describe it to somebody so they would understand.
Well, I hesitate to do that over the phone because it's just a fairly complex technique. It is described in this article in the journal. But basically what happens as a person takes that image into a place where there's healing and love and forgiveness, the image transforms. At the same time that the image transforms, the fear transforms. So the image allows a new avenue into dealing with what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that's a very powerful thing.
It really is, Eva. But it's complex enough that it should be done the first time, at least, with the help of a counselor or a therapist.
What are some things that you could recommend on a daily basis? I notice that you use aromatherapy sometimes. What kinds of aromatherapies would you recommend to somebody to deal with angers and fears?
I'm not really good with the aromatherapy, but I've worked closely with people who are good, so I'd be referring them to a colleague for the aromatherapy. What I do recommend on a regular basis, though, is relaxation and meditation. Those two approaches can lower a person's level of stress dramatically. If you have a lower stress level, then everything works better. Your mind, your memory, your body, your hormones, everything works better when you're less stressed.
Can you recommend some relaxation techniques?
The easiest one is a total body job, I call it. People call it progressive muscular relaxation, PMR.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a person might tighten up their toes and then take a nice deep breath and relax them. Then tighten up their ankle and their calves, you know, one at a time. And
mm-hmm.
Just slowly relax them, working their way up the body, right through to their face. Many times, this will produce such a profound relaxation that if a person is doing it in bed before they fall asleep, they'll just doze off before they get through the whole series.
Well, that's a good thing to know for people that have sleep disorders.
Yeah, this is a wonderful way to address insomnia. a lot of what I do can help the person need less medication. So they'll have not only the benefits of the medicine, but they'll have fewer side effects.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of what I recommend is learning to shift energy and to invite healing energy.
What kind of energy?
Healing
energy. Okay, healing.
To be more active, more present, more strong. By practicing this, the person can invite their energy to shift. Now people say, well, what do you mean by energy? So my explanation is that we're both matter and energy. Einstein said this many decades ago, and modern physics has pretty well confirmed that. And medicine has been rather slow to accept that the body could be addressed as energy instead of as matter. So if people become comfortable and familiar with identifying their energy, their body energy, they can invite their energies to shift through the relaxation, through meditation, and through imagery of connecting with Mother Earth, or connecting with God, or Christ, or I call it the infinite source.
Mm-hmm.
To invite those wonderful healing energies to be there for us, because they're there all the time, but most of us don't know how to connect with them.
And how would you suggest someone do that?
If a person comes from a background where prayer is comfortable to them, that's a lovely way. Asking your angels to be there for you, to help you open to the energies and to protect you from negative energies, is another way. Picturing that your feet are connected to the earth and inviting the earth energies to come in to give you healing, to give you more positive energy, is another way.
Okay. Now, one of the what made you get interested in spiritual healing? What diverted you from Western medicine?
I have to admit, Eva, I was a horrible, horrible skeptic. Being trained in psychology and medicine and psychiatry and research, I was just sure that healing wasn't anything more than wishful thinking or maybe denial of serious illness. And I was sure that God was just a projection, just a father image that people had sort of, in a wishful thinking way,
conjured up in their mind.
Yeah. In order to, you know, not look at the fact that when they died, they were dead. Well, in 1980, I observed a healing that was medically impossible. It was just a little thing. It was just a little lump under a young man's nipple. But it shrank in half an hour when the healer gave a healing.
Really?
And that was like a light bulb that went on in my head that said, this really deserves to be studied. So since 1980, I've been studying it every way that I know. I started out at first still being skeptical, thinking, well, maybe this is a fluke. So I looked at the research that's been done in healing. And over the years, I've gathered 191 controlled studies of healing, which I've put into the first of the books that I published called Healing Research, Volume 1. It's titled Spiritual Healing, Scientific Validation of the Healing Revolution. In that book, there are studies of humans receiving healing, the scientific studies where one group got healing, the other group didn't get healing, and at the end of the study they compared the two. But there are also studies of animals and plants and bacteria and yeast getting healing. So there's no question whatsoever that this is a placebo effect or just people's imagination, unless mice and plants have imagination.
That's just amazing. I have to ask you, what kind of healing did that healer do to that person?
She was doing a variation of Reiki healing. which she has extended as a very gifted healer into her own sense of healing.
So she was placing her hands over the body?
Yes. She was putting her hands on the chakras, on the energy centers along the midline of the body. And this really bothered me, because when she was giving the healing, she never actually touched the little lump. She just gave healing to his energy centers. And yet there was this wonderful change.
That's amazing.
In my book, the popular edition of Volume 1, I have about 100 pages of healers from around the world describing these sorts of techniques and these sorts of results. Some of the healers are now actually working in doctors' offices. Some of the healers are themselves doctors.
That's just amazing. What took you so long to publish your book?
Another interesting question. Publishers of healing weren't particularly interested in big books that have lots of references. Publishers of big books with lots of references didn't know what to do with healing.
An interesting combination there.
Yeah. I tell people these books are babies that were 20 years in gestation. It took that long to find a publisher. And the more recent book, Volume 2, I published myself.
And is it available to people? How could they buy it if they wanted to buy a copy?
My website, sex website, is holistic, W-H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C, healingresearch.com, has a section where people can order books. And they can also see a detailed description of the book to be sure which one they'd like to get.
Now, I know that you also, the International Journal of Healing and Caring. You write that publication, don't you?
I'm the editor, and I invite people who have interesting experiences to share to submit articles. And not just the therapist, but also having the therapist invite some of their clients to submit reports what it's like to receive the healing. In the free issue of the journal that's available online, there's a wonderful article by a man who had a massage that was completely transformative. It changed his life.
What happened? Do you recall?
He came into memories of feelings towards his father that had bothered him for years. The massage helped him to release a lot of the negative feelings and to understand his relationship with his father on a very, very level.
Sort of like coming enlightened a bit, right? You suddenly have knowledge that you don't know where it came from, but it's beneficial to your life.
Yes, Eva. And I know you're really strong on intuition, and that's one of the things that we also teach here in the International Journal. I've written several articles and editorials about that.
Yeah, I have so many things. One day I'm going to write you about it. So many things that's happened over the past 2 years. When I first called you, it was right when the gift came on. But so many things, and you know, I've had time now to get feedback back from people, so I'm going to send you all that stuff one day. Maybe you can use some of it.
That'd be really interesting. Thank you.
You've got a couple of more books coming out, don't you?
Volume 3 is nearing publication, and that's about research in spiritual awareness. Not just religion, but in personal spirituality. That's going to be the title of the book.
Well, I'd love to read that one.
It's amazing just to see how they've studied near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. They've studied reincarnation memory. So there's scientific evidence confirming that all of these things have happened so many times to so many people. Even though you can't prove it with a test or an objective measure, the fact that people all around the world report the same story. For instance, if someone loses someone who's close to them who passes on, they did a survey in the American Journal of Psychiatry in 1988 asking people, have you ever had the sense that 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 person was still present. 2 out of 3 people said yes. Now, the American Journal of Psychiatry is not a New Age journal. And for them to publish an article like that, and to do a survey like that, is an acknowledgement of how very common these experiences are. The amazing thing, though, is that most people don't talk about it because they think they're going crazy.
Well, we get assertions from the general public that, you know, that we're crazy when we talk about things. I mean, I know because I had one, and when I talk about it to an average person, they think I'm crazy.
Well, if you talk to 2 out of 3 people, you'll actually find enough people who will say, my goodness, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I had an experience like that. And I thought of telling my doctor, I thought of telling my counselor, I thought of telling my priest, you know, my minister, my rabbi, but I held my tongue because if I told them, I'm sure they'd think I'm losing it.
That's exactly what happened to me.
And when they hear that someone is open to listening to it, they are so grateful, first of all, to know for themselves that they're not losing it, but also to know that other people have experienced this, that this is a real, valid experience.
Do you have any profound stories like that?
There are just so many. I know of a person who was really worried because his wife died in pain, and he had contributed to the pain unintentionally, just by moving the body a little roughly when she was sensitive because of the cancer pain. And he was really feeling guilty that, you know, he made her last days more painful. When he saw her, she was able to tell him not to feel bad anymore, that she was okay, and that she understood, and that she forgave him because she knew that he had not hurt her intentionally. Now, a skeptic would say, oh, well, you know, this man is just imagining it in order to relieve his guilt.
Right.
But if it is an imagination, it's a pretty powerful healing experience. There have been other cases where the person came back and they told information that the person who heard the information didn't know about, like where the will was put, or that they couldn't find, or where the
really?
Where the key to the vault was left. So these are very real experiences.
Well, do you have some more stories about how you know that spiritual healing works that you could share with people?
Sure.
I know they love to hear the stories.
My specialty, being psychotherapy, led me to ask some questions that a healer I was observing when I was just learning about healing hadn't thought to ask. This healer was working with a woman who had arthritis in her hand. The healer was just, in a social way, asking this woman how she was as she started the healing. I noticed as this woman was talking that her fists were clenched as they rested on her leg. So I interrupted, asking if it's okay to ask a question. The healer and the woman said, sure. So I said, what do you think your hands are saying? She unclenched her fist, looking at her palm, and said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, if they're not speaking to you, then maybe there's nothing to it. About 2 minutes later, she continued talking. There were her hands clenching at the fist again. So I interrupted politely and asked again, what do you think your hands might be saying? The woman again went through the same procedure, opening her hand, saying, what do you mean? You know, what are you asking? I don't know. The third time I did this, she growled at me, are you saying I'm angry? And we all burst out laughing because she got it. she noticed that it was her fist that I was pointing to. When she got in touch with her anger, it helped the healer who was doing energy healing to help her release the angers that were tying her up, tying her body up to knot. That's very painful.
That she was relayed from physical pain as well?
Oh, yeah. And over a period of about a year, her arthritis cleared up.
Really?
As she released the anger. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And that's a very common experience. And it works in both directions.
Sometimes, what do you mean by that?
Sometimes a person comes to me for psychotherapy, and I might say to them, you know, we're really talking and seem to be stuck here, you know, it's not really going anywhere. Why don't I just offer you some healing energy? So I might then do my healing with my hands near the body, allowing the energies to go and shift as they need to. And then that process of helping them shift their energies may open their awareness into the root of the physical problem. And the opposite way could be someone having a pain, for instance, where I might offer healing just for the pain. In the process of receiving healing, suddenly they come into an awareness of what the healing is about. About the hurt, the emotional hurt, that got locked into the body as that pain.
Now, I'm curious, have you ever noticed certain physical ailments that coincide with certain emotional problems?
Absolutely. I happen to know a medical intuitive who is absolutely wonderful to do. And I'll give you a little story. Wendy Hurwitz, is this her name?
Oh, I've talked to her before. Somebody else told me about her.
She's in New York, and she works over the phone. She's that gifted. She doesn't have a person present. She helped me when I bashed my knee, my left knee. Left knee? No, it's my right knee. I bashed my right knee, slipping on some paper in my office on the floor. Now, the knee was exquisitely tender just below the kneecap. For 2 weeks, I could walk, I could bicycle, I could go up and down stairs. It didn't bother me, but if I touched it there, it was like catch your breath kind of pain, really intense pain, which was so unusual. So I called Wendy when it didn't clear after 2 weeks, and she asked me, now, what do you think is going on in that knee? And I had no clue. She said, okay, let me tune in. She said, okay, what happened when you were 7 years old? Now, I went back in my memory and I searched. I had no memory of hurting my knee when I was 7 years old. And I said that to her. Now, she wouldn't say this to someone else, but because she knows me, you know, we're colleagues, she said, no, silly. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, what happened to your knee. What happened in your life when you were 7 years old? And suddenly, I got back a memory of my younger brother being born when I was 7. And for some reason, that memory was coming loose as some of the jealousy that I felt of the attention that he was getting.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it came out through this pain in my knee. Once I remembered that pain and released it, within half an hour, it was down from maybe an 8 to a 10 to a 3. And over the next day or so, it cleared completely.
excuse me. I'm curious. In my readings, soft tissue injury of your support system had something to do with the lack of emotional support. Was there something going on in your life that lacked emotional, or where you felt you didn't have emotional support you needed that may, at the time you got the injury, that it may have triggered that lack of emotional support injury to come back?
That's interesting, Eva, and it's logical. Although I don't remember at the time of the knee injury the lack of support in my life from my parents has been a major piece of work that I've had to clear and work on through a number of years. So you're right on target here.
It's amazing how your body interprets. And you know, I've learned something since I last talked to you. Maybe you can tell me or use it sometime and experiment with it and tell me what you find. But I have people, I'll have them close their eyes and I'll have them bring up the thing in their life that's emotionally painful to them, whatever that might be, and experience it at this moment as if, even if it was like, or you may can do it right now. Go back to that time when your brother was born and pull that up in your head and experience it right now and remember exactly how you felt when you were standing there and he was getting all the attention that you weren't. And go down to your abdomen about 2 inches above your navel and about 3 inches in. I don't know if we can do this over the phone. You might feel pressure, but, and see if you find a sense of subtle heightened awareness that feels somewhat like it does when a policeman turns on the blue light behind you. You know, you get that funny feeling in your stomach. It's like that, but much more subtle.
Right.
Can you do that now?
Yes.
Do you feel it?
I'm there.
Can you feel that?
Uh-huh.
I believe, and that's what I was on the phone with NCAM before I called you, and that's what we were talking about. I'm absolutely convinced in my head that when you get that sense of subtle awareness, that it's creates an electrical impulse that first goes to your heart, which I think I researched some with the HeartMath Institute this year. And we're convinced that that feeling sends an electrical impulse to your heart, who then sends an impulse to your brain, which releases neurotransmitters. And then when that happens, you know, they release neuropeptides, which will affect a particular part of your body that where those particular emotions store. And in this instance, you know, your support, the soft tissue of your support system. So I think if maybe, you know, if you might consider experimenting that with your patients and if they can control that through forgiveness, because if you forgive and just let that feeling pass through your gut so that it doesn't get held there in that solar plexus, I'm convinced those neurotransmitters won't fire and won't make you sick. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, every single person, I've done hundreds of readings now, it's been long enough time, every single person that I've had pull that emotion up gets that feeling, which has got to be indicative of something.
That's very interesting.
You know? So, and once I get them to work on it, because I'm not a healer, I'm just more a diagnostician, but once I get them so that they can bring that emotion up and it doesn't feel painful anymore, it's just like they're observing it from a third-party perspective, they don't hurt anymore. If that makes any sense, I don't know. It's just something to think about. So, what would be probably the most convincing thing that you've had with some of your patients that your healing, this spiritual healing work, as opposed to a sugar pill or a placebo effect in their mind?
The fact that people come after years of having searched for help, and then they find that nothing else helps, but the healing helps. For me, that's pretty convincing evidence.
I agree.
Now, there's a skeptic, though, will say, well, you know, you're a very nice guy, maybe just because of your nice personality, or, you know, maybe they were just ready to let go of it. And I don't fault people for being skeptical, because I was so skeptical when I started out.
Tell me some of the things that you might suggest to work on for forgiveness techniques.
Forgiveness is often a step into acknowledging the hurt that's inside us.
Does that mean that someone has to accept some responsibility instead of blaming?
Exactly. right up and down.
Because I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, but they did this to me.
Right.
This person did this thing, and so they don't accept that kind of, I don't know, what goes around comes around, and that's something that they may have lived in their life that they did, that they didn't realize that they did, really did play a contributing role. So how would they begin to acknowledge that so they can begin forgiving? You know, because relationships and things are always two-sided. So how would somebody begin to learn how, what their role was? How can they learn to identify that and accept it and forgive that other person?
Well, the first piece is just realizing that holding on to anger may be unhelpful, to put it mildly. Holding on to anger keeps us uptight. So basically, we're making ourselves miserable.
And I think that you would agree with me here. When we make ourselves miserable, even if we're not saying anything, the people around us feel it too, because we are energy. And would you agree that that energy resonates to the people in your lives and makes them miserable too?
Oh, yeah. This misery is contagious.
So how would be a good way for them to address that? Because I happen to know somebody I'm thinking about right now that lives in that state of denial and blame, and it makes everybody else around them totally miserable.
Well, what you're asking is a really complex question. One of the things that I do in counseling is marital and family therapy. Because oftentimes, when one person, as you point out, is miserable, then everyone around is miserable. So, if the whole family could come, I would be inviting the other people in the family to ask why it is that they're taking on this person's misery. If he wants to be miserable, why not just let him have his misery and get on with their lives without suffering his misery?
And what would, if you have some suggestions that you could suggest for children in learning how to deal with that, the energy remnants of someone else's anger?
Children oftentimes need help in different ways. They may need a counselor over a period of time.
What about the energy healing parts of it? What could we do for our children?
Oh, energy healing is wonderful for children because they, you know, they get soaked it up. They don't have barriers of doubts or questions. They just sense it quickly and allow it to happen. So energy healing oftentimes is transformative for children.
And that would be the things such as Reiki and meditation and such?
Therapeutic touch and prayer healing.
Okay. Now, if you, we're about to end our time here today. If you had one thing that you could say that you thought would or could change the world and help people heal, what would that be? I'll put you on the spot here.
Find a place in your heart where you would hold a child or a puppy and connect with the feeling of love and acceptance and healing and forgiveness that's subconsciously present in that place.
Now, you made me think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Practice being in that place as much of the time as you can. So if someone comes at you and they're angry, if you're in that place, you don't have to take on their anger.
You made me, when you said touching a puppy or a child, you made me think of another question I want to ask you before we hang up. And is, what do you think is the importance of touching those people that you love and being touched by those people you love? And how do you think that affects your emotional well-being?
Having a loving person in your life and being that loving person for another human being invites healing into the lives of all participants. So I encourage you to find ways to be on both ends of that experience.
Do you think that it's significant to be touched?
Oh, absolutely. It's essential to life. People who don't have touch tend to be depressed, tend to be more stressed. Children who don't have touch can actually die.
Are you serious? Do you know of any stories?
It's actually been given a name. It's called marasma. And that's children dying from lack of touch.
I had no idea.
They found that in orphanages.
What happens? Do they just go into a hole and just never come out? Or what? How does that happen?
They stop eating and they don't.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Dr. Benor, I thank you so much for coming on my show, and not only that, but for being who you are and being willing to take it out into the world.
And thank you, Eva, for putting together this show and for bringing a lot of light into the world through what you're doing.
Thank you, and I hope you'll come back sometime when your new book's out.
I'll happily do that.
Thank you, and agape to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.